Hey everybody, welcome to your next edition of I Can't Make This Stuff Up. Today I am bringing you the author, an awesome lady, LJ Jackson. She is the Harriet Tubman of dreams with a proven track record of restoring hope to the hearts of thousands for more than 20 years. She is a coach, mentor, and speaker with a passion to help those who've experienced living from day to day in a neighborhood, family, or country that's kept them guarded or unable to rest easy and sleep peacefully at night, thus prompting her to write her book, Sleeping With My Shoes On, Reclaiming Your Innocence, Reclaiming Your Power. Please welcome today, LJ Jackson. Thank you for being here. And please tell us a little bit about your book and kind of what took you to this place to want to write.
Yes, hello, and thanks for having me. I'd say that honestly, you know, I think as the saying goes, we all have at least one good book in us. So for the last 10 years, I think it's just been kind of something where I thought, you know, I think I should put my stories in a book, because I find as a coach or I also work as a counselor, I'm often telling my stories anyway. So then I thought, you know, it's time to finally put it in writing, put paper to pen and make this happen.
Very good. Now you said stories. So the book has various stories, or is this all about your life or just different stories that you know of?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So they're actually, the book starts off with my stories. So there's seven chapters, and the first four chapters, I share my story. Some like, heavy, hard-hitting, great stories, but stories that we've all kind of been through, universal stories that everyone can relate to. And then in chapter 5, I get into stories of my clients. And then 6 and 7 are really about, you know, the reader and why this matters for them and how I can help them in their journey or taking their business or their life to the next level.
Okay. Now, you said your clients. What is your profession and how has that kind of molded this book?
Yes. So I actually am a trained school counselor and school psychologist. So I've worked in the helping profession since 1995, and working with children, families, adults, Head Start, kindergarten, you name it, you know, just in different genres to help make a difference. Okay. And so what really, really sparked me to go ahead and write the book and make it happen was my work as a high school counselor. So oftentimes, I worked as a counselor for 10 years, and I would have the parents come in to talk to me about their, you know, son or daughter or their children. But then they would often open up to me and tell me about their story, their journey, and how it was a generational thing. They didn't have the support they needed, so they're doing their best, but they really don't know what they're doing. And they would just kind of go on and tell me about their pain, their trauma, their drama. And I thought, wow, you know, I really want to help the parents and really the matriarchs of the family, the mothers who are, you know, doing this all alone, or they're putting their dreams on hold. And I thought, you know, I really want to give women the space, you know, all readers, but women in particular, the space to take some time, downtime, and help themselves or get the help they need. And I intentionally made the book short so that it could be, you know, to the point, powerful and helpful, but not where it would take, you know, too much time to read.
Very good. Now, with your youth and some of your younger clients, what kind of stories have you mostly dealt with them to lead you to talking to these mothers and kind of digging a little deeper into their past?
Great question. So a lot of with the youth and the students and the teenagers, they often, you know, will engage in either low grades, like getting D's and F's. And I'm confident that every, you know, grade or F has a story behind it, you know, whether it's they don't understand the material or they're hurting and that's their cry for help. So the students would often come to me, you know, with D's and F's. And so then I'd say, you know, what's going on? Talk to me, you know, how can I help? And then they would often say, well, you know, at home, this is going on or this is happening. Or the parent would come in and with the student, and then they would say, okay, yeah, you know, we're going through a divorce, or we've been split up, or now it's a, you know, it's you know, like 50-50 split joint custody, things like that. You know, students are having depression, anxiety attacks and things just because they're struggling with coping skills to deal with all the things that are going on outside of their control.
Now, how much, this is a little outside of the book maybe, or if you've covered it, let me know. How much of maybe PTSD have you seen in some of these kids or parents?
Great question. So yeah, you know what, actually, so I've worked with students, you know, like I said, since 1995, but the last 10 years I like, you know, intentionally had like a laser focus and paying attention to it. And as far as the PTSD goes, interestingly enough, like I'd say maybe 60%, if not 70% of the students and parents had PTSD. And, you know, just post-traumatic stress, like either having loved ones die in front of them or, you know, die at home unexpectedly or suddenly, you know, just shock of a car accident. Unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, on the roads, we've had students and families get into accidents that, you know, change their lives forever. So honestly, just for different reasons, whether it's homelessness, you name it, personal, social, emotional, academic, they've experienced a lot of traumatic events that cause post-traumatic stress. And so I'd say at least 70% of my families that I work with, or the families that have opened up to me, have witnessed it or experienced, you know, experienced it in some way.
Right. So I call it non-combat PTSD for the simple fact that they're not at war, but it seems like some of these kids and even adults are experiencing things in their neighborhoods or families, generational dysfunction that they have not been able to deal with. No one's really diagnosed them. And I also looked at the numbers before, and there really isn't any concrete numbers nationally or statewide, because you're in California, correct?
Right. And then, interestingly enough, I'm glad you pointed that out, non-combat PTSD, because for my families, a lot of them have it, but it's not, you know, not on the battlefield in a sense of the military, but unfortunately the battlefield of their neighborhoods. And so, unfortunately, they walk to school and they have to deal with risk of being, you know, robbed or held at gunpoint or stabbed, you know, things like that on their way to and from school.
Right.
And so, in that way, you know, they deal with combat. You know, of course, not non-military, but
now, are your services solution based, or are you more just a person that they can kind of vent to? And how do you work with your clients once you get them? How do you work with them?
Yeah, great question. So for me, I have a background, you know, and so in my school psychology training, it was actually more of an emphasis in neuropsychology. So about the brain, memories, the mind, how that works, and how we can help tap into that to connect the dots. And then as far as school psychology, as far as the psychology component and my, you know, formal background, it was more of a, you know, of course, how culture and all that stuff shape you. And then in the guidance and counseling master's degree program that I experienced, it was all the therapeutic techniques that exist. So to answer your question, I would start with like client-centered first, you know, so tell me your story, what's going on with you, you know, just kind of get some history, things like that, and then decide, okay, starting with solution focus, you know, so where are we at and where you need to go and where you want to be, and then figuring out what kind of techniques or, you know, if we need some additional kind of a wraparound services and support, whether it's coaching versus therapy or you know, things like that. And just really based on what they need, I meet them where they're at and adjust accordingly.
You know, I ask you a lot of this too, so that when individuals get inside your book, they understand that you are coming from a very experienced point of view. It's not superficial, it's incredibly in depth. So they understand what they're getting from you is from a professional standpoint with lots of experience. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yes, thank you.
So I heard that you are going to read us a passage in your book, and then we get a chance to talk about it.
Yes. So this is honestly, I think, a story that's near and dear to my heart because it's, you know, a true life, based on true life events. And I thought your listeners would appreciate hearing this part of my journey and my story.
Let's do it.
Okay. So this is the fires of life. Get up. The house was on fire. My mom yelled, "What?" How could I have not smelled the smoke or heard the car explode or the crackling of the flames? The carbon monoxide had had me in a trance, and the thick black smoke filled every corner of the room. It was pitch black. I jumped to my feet and struggled to adjust my eyes, hoping the light switch would come on any second, but it didn't. I was scared to make a move. And then I heard my mom say, "Get in the tub. It's cool. It'll take a while for the fire to reach us." So I followed the sound of her voice as we all made our way to the bathtub. There we were, my mom's cousin, his girlfriend, my mom and myself, the four of us, standing in the darkness in complete silence. "I guess this is it," I thought. "It's gonna hurt, but it won't last forever. Eventually I'll be dead and I won't feel the pain." I tried to wrap my head around the idea of burning to death. After standing for what seemed like hours, it occurred to me that the small rectangular window was covered with bars, and right up to the left of us, it was high and too much for us to escape, but maybe, just maybe, if I yelled for help, someone might hear me and get help before it was too late.
Oh my God. And this is a personal experience for you?
Yeah, so this happened when I was 15 years old. Yes. So I was in ninth grade, and literally I was, you know, thinking, wow, like, this is it. You know, I haven't really done much, but I guess, you know, this is it.
Oh, why did you choose that particular passage? And then follow that up with, what is the hardest part of this book for you to write? Was that it?
Yeah. So I chose that passage because I think, just in my, you know, years of experience of dealing with clients of all ages, stages, nationalities, that we often feel like we're alone, or like we're the only one that experienced something. You know, we feel like it's just us and no one can relate. And so even though I may not be able to relate to their particular personal situation, we all go through the fires of life, or we all have moments that are unbelievable, that, you know, people would be surprised if they heard or if they knew that really happened to us in life. And so that's why I try to. And then it's also been what I found the foundation in the work that I do, because it's given me the skills and the abilities to find a way and see a way for my clients, even when there appears to be no way. So for me to, at one point in that situation, really feel hopeless and feel like all, you know, all was lost and I was about to die, you know, excruciating death, I, you know, managed to find a way out, even though, like I said, it just seemed like there wasn't. And so over the years, I really have this deep down passion, and that stayed with me. And so I'm determined to help the client figure out what their way out is, even though it's not on the surface. You know, it doesn't appear to be there when they first look.
You clarify their path.
Yes.
Very good. It's hard sometimes, you know, when you're in the thick of it, to be able to see a way out. So I can definitely see how that would be beneficial, and we can all benefit from something like that. Who can benefit most from your book? And I know it sounds like just about anybody can get something from it, but who is the most affected by reading this book?
Yes. So I wrote it mainly geared towards young adults and college students, just kind of being aware that different situations happen when, you know, going from the transition from high school to college, and having those parties, those frat parties or sorority parties, or different things that happen where people find themselves in situations, or even with unfortunate date rape that happens way far too often than it should, and then trying to deal with the aftermath of that. So college students, young adults, and for those of us that are in our prime, or are just feeling like we're just getting started, and we have some things that may be lying dormant. So it's really not about, you know, ripping up bandages or pulling up old wounds that don't need to be messed with or bothered, but really for those who read the book and they're like, wow, I'm amazed. That just actually kind of was the sob that I needed to, you know, make sure that it was completely healed.
Right. Okay, very good. Now, I know you said everyone has a good book in them. Do you have two good books in you? What is the follow-up, or will there be a follow-up to this?
Yes. And so now, honestly, I just feel passionate still about my parents and families. And so I plan to, for 2018, to work on the and complete the follow-up book, which is really a book for parents, you know, because as they say, children don't come with instructions. And so a lot of times I find as a school counselor and school psychologist, it's kind of not intentionally, but a us against them, or a wall between us, or misunderstanding of what we do and offer. Mm-hmm. Or there's a, as far as interventions go, you know, things that can help. And so, like, for example, I'll tell you a quick story. I had a goddaughter who was in, say, second grade at the time. And at that time, they thought, okay, we're going to have to hold you back, or hold her back, because she's not, you know, progressing. And so I thought, well, wait a minute, I don't know everything, but I like to think I know a little about a lot. So let's try some of these interventions and see if they work. You know, a lot of it was play therapy. And so we tried them, and she ended up getting an award for most improved by spring of that year. And so I really want to share those things with parents in hopes that they can help them on their journey with their children.
Very good. Well, tell our listeners where they can find more information on you, where they can buy the book. And just keep in touch with you and kind of follow you and your journey.
Yes. So my website is personalpowerwithin.com. And I would love to have the listeners follow me on Instagram. I'm under LJ Jackson. And then also Facebook. I'm Personal Power with LJ Jackson on Facebook. And I'm on LinkedIn as well under LJ Jackson.
Awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time. I am looking forward to keeping in touch with you, following your journey, and continuing to be inspired, because what you are talking about is definitely something that many of our young people and old, but definitely our youth, young adults could benefit from, because they're in a stage, I think, where we say they're invincible, right? They feel invincible, and then something happens to bring them back down to reality. So it definitely sounds like this is an opportunity for them to kind of feel their real power, which is being human, knowing that bad things happen and being able to find your way out of them.
Exactly.
Well, thank you again. And hopefully we will definitely keep in touch. We appreciate your time. And I look forward to that follow-up.
Thank you. And I look forward to it as well. Thank you for having me on your show, and take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye.